Chapter 8, verse 11 of the Bhagavad Gita.
So last week we did verse number 10 in chapter 8, a lot of information where the Lord tells us that how to reach this imperishable Brahman, the Lord that is all pervading, the consciousness, how to reach him. So we had some practical steps yesterday, that at the time of death, where he talked about the death of the ego, not at the physical death, but where the ego ends, and where the mind is undisturbed, unmoving, focused on its goal. And how does he sit, this he or she, this meditator sits with an attitude of devotion, extreme love for the Lord and love for the goal. Because unless you have love for the goal, you will not achieve anything. And yoga bala, and with the power of yoga. Yoga means mind joined with the higher. Dhruvor madhye, and in the middle of the eyebrow, which is called the Agnya Chakra, where he focuses his concentration and regulates all his pranas, all the digestive, all our physiological functions are controlled, and all my activities are dedicated to the higher. All the prana represents all my activities. And then such an individual reaches that Param Purusham, the highest Lord, who is Divyam, who is very brilliant, effulgent, ever shining. So that he reaches. So now today he will expand on this a little more. Actually, in the next two verses that we'll cover today are further explanation of what we had discussed last week. So we'll do that. Verse number 11, chapter 8. Verse number 11. Yadaksharam veda vido vadanti vishanti yat yat yo vitaragaha yadichanto brahmacharyan charanti tatte padam sangrahena pravakshe. Tat means that, and yat means which. So which and that, referring that is, we always describe God or Brahman as that. That means far away. We think of him as that God, you know, who is there somewhere. So how to bring that into this here? Because he is not only there everywhere in the heavens, in the church and the temple or the mosque, but he's also here, this, the one. So this is which is close by and that which is far away. So that and which, you know, which is what? Now this God, he is described as Aksharam. Yat, that which. Aksharam. Aksharam means imperishable. Kshara means which perishes, which dies, which ends. Aksharam means which never perishes. Aksharam, who describes it? Veda Vida. Veda means, the Vedas are our spiritual texts, four. And Veda Vida means the knower of the Vedas. Vadanti, they describe him, they talk about him as the imperishable Lord. Vishanti yat yatayo vitaragaha. Vishanti means enter. Enter which? Whom do they enter? Who are the ones? Yatayaha, the self-controlled people who put effort in this direction. That those are called yatis. So the self-controlled ascetics. And ascetic does not mean only a person wearing orange clothes and wandering in the Himalayas, but anybody who lives a life of self-control and directs his or her attention in that direction and puts effort. See, the number one thing is you have to put effort in this direction, then only, because nothing in this world can be achieved without effort. And so this spiritual goal, of course, being the highest, obviously needs sustained effort. And that effort has to be vita ragaha. Ragaha means attachment. Vita means without attachment, without excessive longing for it. And who are the people who want this goal? Yat ichchantaha. The one who ichcha, the one who have the desire, the one who want it. Or who are those? Brahmacharyam. Brahmacharyam means one who wander in Brahman. Brahmachari, we usually think of as somebody as a celibate who does not, you know, have any contact with the opposite sex. But here, brahmacharyam actually does not mean only that. It means one whose sense organs are in control and whose mind wanders in Brahman. Brahmacharyam charanti. And that they roam around in this world and they exert all the effort because their mind is always reveling in the Lord. Tat te padam. That padam, that goal, that state, that, you know, stay higher state of consciousness, that location, that place, te padam sangrahena. Sangrahena means briefly pravakshe. Pravakshe means I will tell. Vakshe means I will tell. Pravakshe means I will tell it very well. So the Lord is saying that this knowledge, even though I will give it to you in brief, I'll make sure that I make it very clear. And that is the beauty of the Upanishads and the Bhagavad Gita, that in few verses we find that the highest truth is explained so beautifully, and brevity is the hallmark of the scriptures. The knowledge scriptures, there are of course scriptures that are related to rituals and Puranas, stories and all, there they have detailed descriptions. But when it comes time to give the knowledge, they give the our teachers, our rishis, give the knowledge in brief and to the point and give back maximum information into the words. And the Bhagavad Gita is a beautiful example. It has 700 verses, and in 700 verses, they are given the essence of the Upanishads, the highest teaching in chapter 7, 8, 9. Then they have taught us all the paths, the path of karma yoga, service, path of love, devotion, bhakti yoga, then the path of meditation, the path of knowledge, jnana yoga, then how one should live one's life, and then how the different kinds of people are there in this world and different activities. There is so much information given in those 700 verses. Why? Because each verse is packed with, you know, tightly packed with information. So that's why in this class, sometimes we only get one or two verses covered, because there is so much information packed in those verses. So that's why it's okay to go slowly. You know, we are not in any rush. You know, we still have many lifetimes to So, but, you know, in the next few years, we shall finish the Bhagavad Gita, hopefully. But the idea is that whatever we are studying, we have to go into the depth of it, understand it, and then go home and reread it. That's why it's good for everybody to have these books. So you can go home and reread the commentary by Swami Chinmayananda and then start applying in your life. That this is what I have studied, and how can I apply and make my life better. So that is only, then only the teaching is complete. Otherwise it remains only, you know, from the words of the guru, I have understood a little bit, so I speak, and then it goes in your ears and then stays there. But then it has to become part of my life, and then only the study is complete. So we'll talk a little bit about it. So yad akshara. Akshara means the imperishable. And a couple of weeks ago we had talked in detail about it, that it is that imperishable reality which never ends, which is always there, from which the whole universe emerges. Just as the mud is the imperishable entity from which all parts emerge. The mud remains the same, it becomes into the pot, and then when it becomes into the pot, the mud still remains mud, it doesn't change. And when the pot breaks, it again goes back to mud. So mud remaining the same is the source of all the parts, but mud itself is indestructible. You know, matter is indestructible. It can be modified, but it cannot be destroyed. So similarly, this Brahman, the Lord, from whom this whole universe emerged, is himself described as indestructible. And all the scriptures say that before creation, God was there, and he created the earth out of himself. And then when the day of judgment comes, when the earth ends, in Puranas they call it pralaya, when that happens, the Lord will continue to exist, continue to be there until, and what we believe is there are yugas, where after 4.2 million years or something like that, the earth, all the universe will end, and then again it will start all over again. So the idea is that this universe again and again is created and destroyed. It is created, stays for a few billion years, merges into the Lord, and then again after some billion years it is recreated. So that is So he is called Akshara, indestructible. Veda Vida means the knowers of the Vedas. Vedas are the spiritual textbooks, or what they call our Bible, but it is in four portions. There are four separate texts called Rig Veda, Sam Veda, Yajur Veda and Atharva Veda, in that order. Rig Veda was the oldest, and then Sama, then Yajur, and then the Atharva is relatively new. And these are placed as being several thousand years before Christ, when these Vedas were composed. Originally they were transferred. It is said the Vedas were heard. That's why they are called Shruti. When these rishis or these sages sat in meditation, they heard these divine verses in the cosmos, and they absorbed them into their mind, and then they spoke them, and that's when the students then memorized them. Or the teacher is speaking, so I have to memorize. And these were thousands of verses, and they had amazing memory in those days. And then they would memorize it and then teach it to their student, and student teacher. But then as life became more complicated and it became more difficult to find good students who can memorize, and life became more hectic, and nowadays we have trouble even memorizing a couple of verses. So life became more hectic. So then Ved Vyas, who is said to be the father of the Vedas, he didn't write them, but he took them and organized them into four different Vedas. Rig Ved, Sam Ved, Yajur Ved and Atharva Ved. And these have all the knowledge of that time. Not only the knowledge, spiritual knowledge, but science, philosophy, chemistry, biology, medicine, all those sciences, physics, chemistry, they're all there in the verses of these Vedas. They talk about the stars, they talk about the medicines for the various ailments, all kinds of information is there in those Vedas. And they are divided into three portions. The Vedas are divided into three portions. The one is called the mantras. Mantras are the verses that were composed in praise of nature. See, in the rishis, when they sat for meditation, and their ashrams, their hermitages were on the banks of the river. You know, they had to have the river for water in the forest. So the students could study in isolation, they could meditate. So they were very close to nature, and nature obviously gives us everything. So they had so many verses in praise of the nature, in praise of the sun god, you know, like the Gayatri mantra, Om Ova Swaha, in praise of the moon, the stars, the trees, the plants, the river, the mountains. So nature was praised. They are called mantras. And then the second portion is called Brahmanas, or the rituals. So there were elaborate rituals performed by these priests to honor the god, you know, the one that who has created this beautiful nature. How do you praise him? By composing different songs in praise. And also some of these rituals were meant for specific purpose, like if your son was born, then they would have other rituals. If somebody passed away, for a birthday, for a wedding, so different, you know, rituals and different. Not only that, but there were certain prayers. If there was no rain, and if there was no rainfall, they could do certain yajnas and actually cause rain to fall. So all those, you know, rituals could be performed. So that was that. So the idea was that after having adored, seen the beauty of nature, after having worshipped that Lord who has created that nature with love, when you worship him, then only you are ready for knowledge. See, otherwise you just sit down and read it, it's not going to make as much sense. You have to have a love for nature and have a love for the Lord. And then your studies become more fruitful. So the last portion, which is called the Vedanta, you know, that's why we call our classes Vedanta classes. Veda Anta, the end of the Vedas. End does not mean that it was the least important, so it was put at the last. Ant means it was the highest, the goal of all the goal of these Vedas is to come to this Upanishad, which is the knowledge of who am I, who is this God, and what is my relationship with him. So this Bhagavad Gita is considered to be the essence of the Upanishads. That's why we chant in the Gita Dhyanam, I don't know the verse number, but it says Sarvo Panishado Gavo Dogda Gopala Nandana Partho Vatsa Sudhir Bhokta Duktam Gita Amritam Mahat. So this Gita Amrit, this nectar of the Gita, where did it come from? The Upanishads are the cows. Upanishads are the cows because, as you know, Lord Krishna, when he came on earth, when God himself came as Krishna, he was a cowherd. He lived in the home of cowherds. And he grew up taking care of cows. And in fact, in the main hall, if you go, Krishna is shown with a cow. It's, you know, showing that his childhood was spent taking care of cows. And he used to take the cows to graze and then bring them back and then milk the cows and then distribute the milk. And that's how they didn't have automatic machines, so they had to milk the cows by hand. So using that same simile, he says, Sarva Upanishad Gavo. All the Upanishads are cows, and Dogta Gopala Nandana, and Krishna is the milkman. And what does he do? He milks the Upanishads, the essence of the Upanishads. He has milked and given to us as the Gita, just as the cow is milked and the milk is given for all of us to enjoy. So similarly, the Upanishads are milked and the essence is the Bhagavad Gita. So if you have read the Bhagavad Gita, you have sort of gotten an introduction. Of course, the Upanishads, the teaching is higher, but the Gita is giving the same teachings in a simpler format for all of us to understand. The Upanishads to understand are more difficult, but having studied the Bhagavad Gita, we are ready to study. So it's, you know, we have several Upanishads in the bookstore, and as you are studying chapter 7, 8, 9, you can use the Upanishads to kind of synthesize your knowledge. So he says Veda Vida. So Veda Vida means the knower of the Vedas. And the knower of the Vedas, we take it as somebody who can translate. But that way a PhD Sanskrit professor in the university would be called a Ved Vida. We don't call him a Ved Vida. Why? Because there is one thing to translate the verses from Sanskrit into English, if you're a PhD and you've studied Sanskrit. But a Ved Vida is one who actually knows, who has actually experienced the knowledge. Then only you are called a Ved Vida. Otherwise you can say, okay, Veda translator. You know, okay, he can translate. But if he or she can actually understand and experience that highest truth, so he says these Veda Vida, the knowers of the truth, Call him imperishable. Vishanti yat yatayo vitaragaha. And Vishanti enter, where they enter that same truth, who yatayaha. Yatayaha means one who put the effort. You have to put effort to reach anything. And so that's why it says you have to have control and you have to put effort. And you have to be vitaragaha, without attachment. So people think, you know, without attachment means without love. We are not saying that. What we are saying is that a person who starts out by only loving me, and then he extends that, okay, me and my family, as he gets married, as wife and children. It's okay, so me and my family. Or at the most, me and my community, me and my race, me and my religion, me and my church. But as you start loving the Lord, you see the Lord in all. So it's, you give up the attachment to just one or two, and you see the Lord in everybody. And then there is no attachment because they are all me. They are all mine. And that is very necessary for spiritual progress, to widen your axis of love, to widen your circumference of love. And instead of only being attached to few things, just love everybody without attachment. Because attachment means dependence. That if I have this thing, I am fine. If I don't have it, I am not fine. You know, so that dependence is what causes the problem. But for a wise person, when everything is the Lord's, nothing belongs to me. Whatever I have has been given by him to me. If I have it, if I'm fine. If I don't have it, it was not meant to be for me. And with that attitude, then a person can handle the joys and the sorrows and the losses and problems in life much easier, because he or she realizes that nothing belongs to me. Even this body does not belong to me, it's a gift from the Lord, my mind, my intellect. And so when this person is losing even his body at the time of death, he or she cheerfully goes to that. Because why? Because this body is an instrument, was given to me by the Lord to use. I used it in his service. And when it's time to leave, you know, cheerfully this person can leave his body. Why? Because such a person has no identification with the body. And there is a very beautiful verse in the Bhagavad Gita. It says, Brahman yadhaya karmani sangam tyaktva karoti yaha lipyate nasa papebhya padma patram ivam ambasa. So Brahmani adhaya. Brahmani means in that Lord placed karmani. All activities are dedicated to the Lord, such a person. Sangam tyaktva karoti yaha, and such a person does activities without attachment, without any selfishness, without any sense of I or my, does what is right, does all his or her activities are dedicated in service to the Lord. And then what happens? Lipyate nasa papebhya. And he does not have any sins. No sin can touch him. Why? Because his activities are all pure. Not only that, sin is also described as vasanas, as selfish attachments. When I am devoting everything to the Lord, how can I have any selfishness? How can I have any sense of I or my? Even his successful or activities or whatever he has done, he dedicates to the Lord. And slowly such a person's vasanas are reduced, his ignorance gets reduced, and he comes closer. Because the vasanas, our ignorance, our selfish desires come between me and the Lord within. So the goal of spirituality is to reduce the selfishness and come closer to the Lord. And then he says, Lipyate nasa papebhya padma patram ivam ambasa. A beautiful example. He says, like a lotus leaf in water. We all know that a lotus leaf grows in water, is nourished by the water, but when you put water, it slides off. The lotus leaf has some particular oil where the water does not even stay on it. And so the lotus leaf stays in water but is not affected by that. So a wise person stays in the world, functions, does all his or her obligatory duties without selfishness, and then the world cannot touch this person. The world cannot make this person happy or unhappy, because the person has found the inner joy. So he says, Vitaragaha, so these purple people work without attachment. Yad Ichchanta. Ichchanta means they have a strong desire. They want to reach it. They have to have it. That is the goal of, like how we have such a strong desire for our profession. I have to be successful. We have strong desire for money. We have strong desire for our things and possessions. How strongly, if I lose my computer or lose my cell phone, how much I get disturbed. But if we lose God, today I couldn't pray and meditate, it's okay, tomorrow. It doesn't bother us that much. So they say that the amount of love you have for your cell phone, have that much at least love for God. Or your laptop, you know. I mean, when you lose your laptop, oh, what happened all my day? You know, how sad we get. So that much, at least have that much love. Maybe we're not saying love him more than your laptop, but at least as much. We don't. So he says, Yat Ichchanti Brahmacharyan Charanti. And Brahmachari, as I mentioned, is not only people who are celibate. Here what they mean is people who live a life of control, live a life of moderation. And Brahmani Charanti, the ones whose mind ever revels in Brahman, whose mind always thinks of Brahman. And Brahman is a technical term, we have talked about it, because we believe that God has two aspects, formless and form. Form we know, you know, you can see Krishna playing the flute, Shiva in meditation, Mother Goddess, or Jesus on the cross. So these are all forms of the Lord. But God also has a formless aspect. The Lord that is all pervading everywhere, who's there everywhere as the consciousness, the support in all humans, plants, birds, fish, and from whom this whole creation emerged. So Brahman is that all pervading Lord. And what we believe is that there is only one Lord, Brahman, who takes various forms, because it is easier to love God with form. If I think of Shiva in meditation, or I think of Krishna playing the flute, or Jesus on the cross, my heart immediately gets filled with love. So it is much easier to love God with form, with attributes. But we should understand that this is an aspect of the Lord, who is also all-pervading, formless. And all forms of the God, all forms in the universe are His expressions, whether it's Krishna or Buddha or Jesus or Allah, they're all His expressions. All humans are His expressions, all plants, all birds, all fish. So that Brahman is the one whom these people adore. And these people's mind constantly is filled with that knowledge. Tat te padam, that state. In the Upanishads, they say God is, we always think of God as being a person, you know. Or we think of Him as a place. Oh, in heaven, there is this Father in heaven. Or there is Vishnu, you know, lying on the Sheshnag in the Milky Ocean. But in reality, what God is, not even a He or she, it is a state of consciousness which we represent as, oh, it is that state of consciousness that is within me. And it is a higher state of consciousness. It is not a person or a place, it is a higher state to evolve to. Just as from deep sleep, I wake up, and I partially wake up and I start dreaming. And then from dream, I become awake. So deep sleep, dream, awake. And we say, oh, this is it. But the scriptures tell us there is a fourth state called the Turiya state, which is the state of awakening, the state of realization. And that state we have to all reach. The saints and the prophets, and like Jesus and Buddha and Shankaracharya and Swami Chinmayananda, all these great saints and prophets had woken up. That's why they say it is self-realization. It is not going anywhere or reaching heaven or anything. It is realizing the self. That's why they say God realization is self-realization. So, te padam, that state I shall explain to you briefly. But we think of God either as a person or as a wish fulfiller. You know, God, give me this, give me that. So we only go when we need something. Then we go to the temple and say, oh God, you know, my daughter is not getting married. Or, you know, I'm not getting a job. Or, you know, my child is sick. Yeah, it's okay to pray to Him. But only to think of Him as a tooth fairy, you know, that when I need something, I go. That is not it. It is a state of realization. Talking about wanting something, there was this man who had to go for an interview. And he was, the interview was in Manhattan. And it was a very important job interview. And he had no parking. And he was going from block to block and looking for parking. And he was afraid he'll be late for the interview. Every space was full. Even the garages were full. And he was so desperate that if I don't park my car, I'm going to lose the job. And so he said, finally in desperation, he says, oh Lord, if you find me a parking space, I promise I'll give up smoking, I'll give up drinking, I'll give up going out with fast women, and I will go to church every Sunday. So I'll give up smoking, drinking, women, and even start going to church every Sunday, he promised. And then as he turned the corner, miraculously a space opened, a parking space opened. So he quickly pulled into it and he looks up and says, oh, never mind, I found it. I found it. You didn't do anything. Because he didn't want to do all those things. So he says, that is not what I mean. But it is that state of realization where we all have to go. And so these are the requirements for that. You have to be self-controlled. You have to reduce your desires, reduce your attachments. Have to have the right knowledge. And then apply that knowledge. And then constantly fill your mind with Brahman. Constantly fill your mind with thoughts of the Lord. And we have talked about that in the past, that every occasion you get, just chant his name, have his mantra in your mind. Each of one of us should have a personal mantra. And after a while, it becomes so automatic that as soon as you wake up, you know, the mantra should start. Just before you go to bed, you should chant. Every occasion when you're quiet or not doing anything, you know, try as much as possible to remember him. There is a great teacher called Eknath Ishwaran. He calls it a japa japam. That where you are not even putting the effort, but the japa is constantly playing in your mind like a tape recorder. Once you program it, it starts playing. Whenever your mind is quiet, it starts thinking of the Lord. And that happens with practice, with remembering him again and again, and you know, and all that. So one who reaches that state, I shall now explain to you in brief but very clearly how to reach that state. And how to practice. So the next verse he will talk about the techniques of meditation.
Om Sarve Antu Sukhina, Sarve Santu Niramaya, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukha Lapsyate.